Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Denver Metro News, read by Matt. Today we'll be reading the following main articles. Sheridan Boulevard study seeks to improve safety. Ex-tattered cover CEO buys building for return to bookselling. And TikTok star comes to Colorado to fly rockets. And following up with miscellaneous articles. This is the Denver Herald Dispatch, week of April 10th, 2025. We start with a photograph of Sheridan Boulevard at a crosswalk intersection near Sloan's Lake. Sloan's Lake is in the background, and a group of people are waiting with scooters to cross safely. The caption says, two scooter riders wait to cross Sheridan Boulevard at West 20th Avenue as they leave Sloan's Lake Park. Sheridan Boulevard study seeks to improve safety. Governments to look at high injury street, how to make improvements. By Alan Cowgill, special to Colorado Community Media. The Denver Regional Council of Governments, Dr. COG, an organization that represents and works on behalf of governments throughout the Denver metro area on regional issues, is funding and leading a Sheridan Boulevard safety study between Hamden Boulevard and Interstate 76. Sheridan Boulevard has been identified by Dr. COG as a high-injury network street, one of the streets in the Denver metro area that has a disproportionate number of fatal and serious injury crashes. The study focused on making the roads safer for people that drive, walk, roll, and use transit. As previously reported by Colorado Community Media, residents along both sides of Sheridan have expressed frustration in the dangers of the road, including speeding and dangerous drivers. The program manager for this study, Nora Kern, said the most overwhelming theme we've heard so far, both from the general public and civic advisory committee, has been that Sheridan feels scary and unsafe for everyone. Whether they're on foot or bike trying to cross the street, standing along Sheridan waiting for the bus, or driving along Sheridan. It's really not currently working well for anyone, Kern said. She has also heard lots of concerns from people that walk. They've told her the sidewalks are in poor condition, often too narrow, and there are sections with no sidewalks at all. There are also long distances between safe pedestrian crossings where residents have to walk quite a ways to find a safe place to cross. Even where there are signalized crossings, pedestrians and people on scooters and bicycles are often in conflict with turning vehicles. In the last 5 years in North Denver, there have been 5 fatal crashes along Sheridan Boulevard. 2 of them involved drivers running red lights in separate incidents that killed a pedestrian who was walking at West 48th Avenue, and another incident in 2023 involving Logan Rocklin, who was biking to dinner across Sheridan at West 38th Avenue. Another involved a speeding driver at West 35th Avenue, and a person on a motorcycle was killed in the 1700 block of Sheridan Boulevard by a driver. While led by Dr. COG, this particular study, which kicked off in November, is a collaboration between the cities of Denver, Lakewood, Edgewater, Wheat Ridge, Mountain View, and Lakeside. This first phase of the study focused on identifying the current conditions and problems along Sheridan and understanding what the community's concerns are. Dr. COG will start to focus on drafting potential ideas for improvements this spring and summer. Kern said that they expect to focus our recommendations on high crash and high risk locations. The final plan is forecasted to be done by February 2026. The plan is the first step that can lead to further infrastructure investment and safety projects along the Sheridan corridor. In the meantime, the Colorado Department of Transportation is leading a project to improve Sheridan in Edgewater between West 17th Avenue and West 26th Avenue. That includes wider sidewalks, safer crossings, a median, and improved lighting, along with other changes. The project is currently in the design phase, and construction may begin as soon as next year. Given that so many improvements are going to be made on this section of Sheridan between Edgewater and Denver Sloan Lake neighborhood, Kern said that this study won't be looking to make many additional recommendations in this stretch, but we'll certainly be looking to this design as a model for what might be possible in other sections. Next article, ex-tattered cover CEO buys building for return to bookselling. By Matt Geiger, Business Den. Former tattered cover co-owner and CEO Kwame Spearman is turning the page in his bookselling career. Hopefully, second time will be a little bit more of a charm, Spearman said. The 41-year-old plans to open a bookstore with soul and substance at 1700 Humboldt Street in City Park West. He and a partner bought the 9,000-square-foot building for $2.9 million this week, records show. Spearman and fellow Denver native David Back led an investor group that bought Tattered Cover in December 2020, describing it as a business devastated by the pandemic. Spearman served as CEO until April 2023, when he stepped down amid an unsuccessful run for the Denver School Board. Prior to that, he briefly ran for mayor. The bookstore chain opened locations in Colorado Springs and Westminster under Spearman's tenure, but neither lasted more than 2 years. The business lost over $650,000 in the first 9 months of 2023, ultimately filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy that October. It sold last summer to Barnes & Noble for $1.8 million. Tattered Cover lost its independent status. Tattered Cover losing its independent status was disappointing to a lot of people, including me, he said. Spearman wants to open his new bookstore, dubbed Denver Book Society, by spring 2026. He said it will take about 3,500 square feet of the former Humboldt Kitchen and Bar Restaurant, which closed 2 years ago after a decade on the corner. He is considering turning the restaurant's former kitchen into a smaller, approximately 2,000-square-foot eatery. The 9,000-square-foot property is also home to White Pie Pizzeria and Mexican joint Dos Santos. Both have several years left on their leases. The property was sold by Steve Kirsch, an individual from New York who bought the building for $3.8 million in March 2019. He did not respond for a request for comment. Kirsch was represented by Dorit Fisher and Hayden Hirschfeld of NAI Shames Makowski. Spearman's broker was Tyler Bray of Cushman & Wakefield. Before settling on 17th and Humboldt, Spearman was looking a little further east at Continuum's 9th and Co. development. He considered leasing space in the 26-acre mixed-use development at 9th Avenue and Colorado Boulevard, but said the developer's recapitalization of the property put those plans on ice. Spearman wasn't discouraged. To be a truly independent bookstore, he figured he'd have to own his own real estate, too. Fortunately, there was a familiar place out there for him. The 1700 Humboldt was once home to Strings, a restaurant that operated in City Park West for 27 years before closing in 2013. I think it's a super awesome location. Growing up in Denver, whenever I could get someone to pay for my meal, I would take them to Strings, Spearman said. Spearman has one partner on the deal, Rich Garvin, a philanthropist from San Francisco. Garvin came to Denver during the pandemic and currently serves on the board of Opera Colorado and as the athletics committee chair at the Denver Athletic Club. The two had made a bid to maintain control of Tattered Cover once it entered bankruptcy in 2023. Spearman said he's been working on as a consultant to school districts and nonprofits since. At Denver Book Society, the plan is to become a community hub, with events and programming complementing the literature inside. It'll stand out, he said, by what it stocks. Books that you can easily find on Amazon, you can find on Amazon, he said. You come into our store and have a best-in-class staff opportunity that recommends a book that you wouldn't have found otherwise. Could that have been done when he ran Tattered Cover? Spearman said he's learned from his first run as a bookseller. I think a combination of its history, the pandemic, and me being a first-time bookstore owner made that incredibly challenging, but in my role, I saw the potential of what or how a bookstore could really impact the community, and we plan to do just that. This story was printed through a news-sharing agreement with Business Den, a news site covering local business news in the Denver metro area. Accompanying photograph shows a man with a big smile standing in front of a building, And the caption reads, Kwame Spearman is looking to get back into bookselling game with his purchase of a Denver retail corner. Business Den illustration. Moving on, TikTok star comes to Colorado to fly rockets. Photograph of a video production crew. Captioned, Francis Bourgeois interviews Jake Slater, a Dawson School 10th grader who built a rocket to launch at the CRASH launch site in Fort Lupton, while Shine TV cameraman Sam Redmond and sound man Alex Fauchot of Centennial record. Second photo shows a cameraman filming as two people remotely launch a rocket, the rocket just leaving the ground with a trail of smoke behind it. Caption reads, Francis Bourgeois got to press the launch button and Jack Slater's rocket blasted into the air. Shine TV, Sam Redmond, cameraman filming the launch. Photo by Belen Ward. Fort Lupton rocket hobbyists host train spotter on his path to space flight. By Belen Ward. B. Ward at ColoradoCommunityMedia.com. Francis Bourgeois, who has made his name on social media watching as fast-moving trains shoot past him, now has his eye on spaceflight. And he came to Fort Lupton in March to see if that's possible. This is part of the journey and inspiration to see the rockets launch. I'm looking to see if it's possible for me to become an astronaut and go through the steps along the journey of training and getting my body ready, with the hope of becoming an astronaut, Bourgeois said. Bourgeois was in Fort Lupton March 19th to meet the Colorado Rocketry Association of Space Hobbyists at their launching site, learning how they build the rockets and getting the opportunity himself to press the launch button as they blast off into the sky. It's all part of a documentary for Shine TV, a British television production company that specializes in reality show contests and documentaries. The project is being led by UK producer Jonathan Levine, who met Bourgeois in 2021 through TikTok. I met him in 2021 when I saw his train spotting videos on TikTok. I reached out to him and he said, I'm a TV producer, and if you ever wanted to do anything for television, Levine said. I told him I'd love to throw my hat in the ring, thinking that people ask him all the time, and he emailed back straight away saying, let's chat. So we've been working together ever since. Levine described a documentary that takes the TikTok star around the world experiencing various aspects of spaceflight. The project does not have a title yet or an air date, Levine said. Rail to Orbit. Bourgeois said he has spent most of his life living in Somerset along Britain's western coast. He has had a lifelong passion for trains, which broadened during the COVID-19 pandemic when he began filming his railway experiences and adventures. Trains and railway enthusiasm has been a part of my life since I was a toddler. When I was able to process the world, it's when I knew I loved trains, Bourgeois said. Trainspotters is the British name for particular ardent rail fans who make a hobby out of tracking trains, noting specific engines, and recording their movements. It existed throughout my life, and during COVID, I started filming my railway train spotting moments, kind of by mistake. It's become my career now, and I'm here in America, which wouldn't have been possible if I hadn't posted my first video, he said. He recorded most of his viral videos himself with a fisheye lens on a GoPro camera mounted in front of his face to capture his expression as the trains zoom past. His social media fame soon blew up in 2021, and he claims to have more than 2.9 million TikTok followers and another 2.3 million on Instagram. He has since collaborated with singer Joe Jonas and other celebrities and hosted a digital series, Train Spotting with Francis Bourgeois, on Britain's Channel 4. Going from train engines to rockets was a modest step. I have a broad interest in engineering and particular interest in the railway space and rockets, Bourgeois said. CRASH in Colorado. The Colorado Rocketry Association of Space Hobbyists got its start about 30 years ago, according to range advisor Roland Halperin. He's been a rocket fan much longer than that. When I was younger, I got into rocketry in the 60s while in college, he said. I had a son, he became interested in rocketry, and so we started building rockets together. He found a core group who enjoyed building and launching rockets that are much bigger and more powerful than the standard ones available in hobby stores. Halperin said there are few places to launch these rockets since most municipalities consider them to be fireworks. The group eventually founded Crash the Club at Bear Creek Lake Park and launched from there for about 20 years. Then things changed down there. We were no longer able to launch, and so we needed a new site. And it had to be a very large area, Halperin said. You don't want a lot of grass that potentially could catch on fire. You don't want to be near houses or trees where rockets can hit them. Halperin said they found near Fort Lupton and have been leasing the land from the state of Colorado for about 4 years as Crash. Crash Rocketeer John Scuba said he loves rocketry as a hobby. You spend months building something. I mean, not little things. I can fly big rockets, too. When you put it out of on the pad and you ignite the motor and it goes up, Scuba said, you've done everything right. It's exciting. It's a beautiful flight, and it's a very good feeling. If you haven't done something right, well, it is what it is. STEM Connection. We launch on the first Sunday and third Saturday of every month, starting at 9 o'clock. We have a lot of STEM students come out and a lot of families. We have a lot of people that are just interested in rockets and want to have the support, Halperin said. We also have the Civil Air Patrol cadets come out at least twice a year and launch rockets as part of their training, Halperin said. They have a mandatory program where they have to build a rocket and launch it and learn about aerodynamics. Working with STEM students was a bonus for the filmmakers, and Halperin said it was one of the things that brought them to Fort Lupton. In fact, the production March 19th included several nearby students. Six middle and high school students from Lafayette's Dawson School came to meet Bourgeois and launch the rockets they made in science class. Physics teacher Eric Friedman brought the students to test the rockets that he helped them learn how to build. I taught them the construction of the rockets, and on the physics side of things, we talked about propulsion and thrust and things like impulse and specific impulse, which are words that are used to describe sort of the overall oomph that a rocket motor has, Freeman said. This is my first time out here, and it's super fun. The rockets are great, and the students have been really into it, and that's wonderful. Trainspotting with Big Boy. While in the U.S., Bourgeois also made a stop in Wyoming to visit Union Pacific's 4014 Big Boy, the world's largest steam locomotive. Bourgeois said he was profoundly impressed by the Big Boy, not noting its immense size and detail. I got to see Big Boy and everything that I know about standard gauge steam locomotives and the scale and all its reference points vaporized, Bourgeois said. It was completely blown out of the park. Being next to the wheels and the motion with this massive boiler, I was able to stand inside of the smoke box, stand up straight. This thing's huge, the world's biggest steam locomotive. The following full page is an advertisement editorial by Real Estate Today by Jim Smith Realtor. First article. The typical wood frame home which has dominated subdivisions since the 1990s may soon be history. By Jim Smith. Let's say that the writing is on the wall. The kind of site-built wood frame homes that have dominated new American subdivisions since about 1990 are getting too expensive to satisfy America's needs in a time of severe housing shortage. Several factors are at work which make that style of home construction soon to be obsolete. Factor number one, labor shortages, especially with immigrant labor being deported. Factor two, wildfire vulnerability of wood frame homes, as demonstrated in Boulder County and more recently Southern California. Factor number three, climate change, which is spiking a demand for greater resiliency in home construction. Not just from fire, but from high wind events like tornadoes and hurricanes. Factor 4. Higher costs. Aggravated, no doubt, by 25% tariffs on the Canadian lumber used in most new homes. Having followed trade publications for the home construction and related industries, I am convinced that other technologies and techniques for home construction are about to go mainstream, making today's wood frame on-site building process soon to be obsolete, or at least out of favor, except for super expensive custom homes. I also believe we will see more attention paid to the siting of new homes. It's easy enough to site a home so that it benefits from solar gain, even if it is not solar powered. Simply having big windows to the south with a wide overhang allowing solar gain from the low sun in the winter and the shade from the high sun in the summer is a no-brainer. But it seems there has been a shortage of architectural brains in current and past siting of new homes. Similarly, having fewer windows on the north side of the house is simply smart passive house design. Having an enclosed rather than open foyer, what's called an airlock, is common sense too, and costs very little to implement. And that's just the beginning of the changes I expect to see in new subdivisions. Lennar has already built a 3D printed subdivision in Texas. 3D printing of homes using concrete was a novelty, which I wrote about just a few years ago, but is now becoming mainstream. Other builders have learned from Lennar's experience, and multiple companies have entered that space. A Fast Company article in January 2023 proclaimed that 3D printed houses are the suburbs of the future. The pictures it writes are from that article. Here's an excerpt. Iowa City base Alquist 3D, which specializes in reasonably priced automated construction in rural areas, has already started building Project Virginia, in which it will create 200 3D printed homes, all variations on Craftsman design, also framed in layered concrete and topped with gabled wood framed roofs. Around the state, starting in tiny Pulaski, population 8,691, it's also starting a 25-home project in Malvern, Iowa, and a 10-home development in Muscatine, Iowa. Alquist founder and CEO Zachary Mannheimer says the firm has about 500 total units, ranging in price from $250,000 to around $400,000, in the pipeline in Virginia, Florida, Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, and Texas. Nothing says mainstream quite like Iowa and those other states. Colorado cannot be far behind. Just last month, CBS Colorado, Channel 4 News, reported on a $638,000 grant under Colorado's Innovative Housing Incentive Program to a Salida company, VeroTouch. Following the completion of their two 1,100-square-foot 3D-printed homes in Buena Vista, "We are proud to accelerate innovation in housing to better address Colorado's housing needs," Governor Jared Polis said. "The unveiling of the first 3D-printed homes in the state is a great example of our state's efforts to support new construction methods and create more housing now." The layered concrete walls of 3D-printed homes are naturally fire-resistant. They're typically one-story homes with a standard peaked roof made from wood trusses. As you can see in the picture above, the front three homes in that picture show a 3D home at different stages of completion. A gantry straddling the foundations transports the tube, which lays down layer upon layer of concrete slurry following a computer program. The aforementioned photos is a 3D printed home in Desert Hot Springs, California, which is a ranch style with solar panels on a flat roof. And the second photo shows a Lennar 3D subdivision in Texas, which looks like an artist rendering rather than an actual photograph, showing very typical looking houses clustered together as a suburb. In past columns, I have written about a local company, Colorado Earth, which has pioneered construction of homes using compressed earth bricks called EcoBlocks. That's more labor-intensive since the walls have to be laid by workers, but homes share the same benefits of being fire and weather resilient. New technology abounds in other components that go into home construction. For example, in June 2023, I wrote about a company, Planted, P-L-A-N-T-D, in North Carolina, which has developed an alternative to OSB, the wall sheeting and roof decking used in virtually all home construction, made from a fast-growing perennial grass grown locally on former tobacco plantations, saving 17 trees per house and sequestering 8 tons of carbon dioxide per house. See www.plantedmaterials.com. A Fast Company article in October 2024, reported that home builder D.R. Horton had ordered 10 million of Plantage panels, enough to build 90,000 homes. The innovation taking place in every other component of home construction, doors, windows, manufactured housing, appliances, and more, is stunning to behold, confirming for me that a major revolution in the home construction industry is already unfolding. Be sure that I'll continue to write about it here. I have posted links for everything mentioned in this article on our company blog at http://realestatetoday.substack.com. Next article, also by Jim Smith, Realtor. Does your older home have a Federal Pacific Electric panel? An estimated 28 million American homes built in the 1950s through the 1980s, including many in Colorado, have an electrical panel manufactured by Federal Pacific Electric, which lost its UL certification decades ago because of multiple failures of its stab lock breakers to trip when overloaded, thereby causing a fire hazard. Our friends at Alpine Building Performance, LLC, shared these additional issues with the FPE panels. The breakers often don't connect properly to the panel's bus bars, causing arcing, overheating, and potential fire hazards. Some stab lock breakers get stuck in the on position, even when manually switched off, making it impossible to cut power. Reports suggest that FPE manipulated UL testing results, leading to unsafe products being approved for use. Studies indicate that homes with FPE panels have a significant higher likelihood of electrical fires compared to other panels. For these reasons, any home inspector hired by a buyer can expect to recommend that replacement be demanded of the seller. On this page, inside an inset box, charities which used our free box truck miss it, so we've launched a GoFundMe campaign to bring it back. Back in February, I announced that our truck needed a new engine and other repairs, and that we decided to retire it instead. This was a big loss to such nonprofits as the Wounded Warrior Project, Family Promise, Be Golden, Christian Action Guild, Buffalo Bill Days, and the International Rescue Committee, among others, which use the truck more often than our clients. The truck is off the road, but still available to be repaired or replaced if we raise enough money. If you'd like to contribute, visit www.bringitback.info. This includes a picture of a box truck with golden real estate logo on the side of it. Bottom of the page advertisement for Golden Real Estate, hometown service delivered with integrity, promoting, and modeling environmental responsibility. Jim Smith, broker owner, 303-525-1851. Or email jim@goldenrealestate.com. A twist in the long-running Vizcarra deportation case leads to another delay. Photograph accompanying this is a group of people in a protest rally, one of them speaking into a microphone. Caption says, Jeanette Vizcarra announced bad news in her case to obtain a U visa outside the First Unitarian Society of Denver, June 20th, 2019. Photo by Kevin J. Beatty, Denverite. Article by Ben Marcus, Colorado Public Radio. In a tactical shift, attorneys for Jeanette Vizcarra are now arguing that she is being unfairly targeted for deportation by government agents frustrated by their inability to remove her from the U.S. during a 15-year process. The new approach by attorney Laura Lichter caused the cancellation of a recent court hearing designed to determine whether Vizcarra could continue to be held by the government for deportation. Instead, U.S. District Judge Nina Y. Wang convened a status conference and gave the government 3 weeks to respond to Lichter's forthcoming new argument that pursuit of Vizcarra is rooted in their frustration with her criticism over the years of immigration and customs enforcement. As the court is aware, this case has been moving very quickly, and there have been material changes, some additional facts that we determined after we filed our initial petition, said Lichter. One of those centers around our concern that Ms. Vizguerra's detention was retaliatory for her exercise of her First Amendment speech rights. She was ambushed in the Target parking lot by officers from Immigration and Customs Enforcement who said, "We finally got you." Such an argument may not ultimately protect Vizguerra from deportation, but it adds a new wrinkle to a case that has played out for more than a decade through immigration courts and the news media. And for at least for now, it means she will remain held in the ICE detention facility in Aurora. The government asked for 21 days to respond to the yet-to-be-filed amended petition, noting that the court has already put a stay on any deportation until federal court proceedings run their course, which the judge said could push a hearing on the matter to late next month, depending on when the amended petition is filed with the court. Vizguerra has multiple federal court cases in process, including the one heard Friday. While her attorneys challenged her detention in federal district court, there's also disputing the validity of the deportation order against her in the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. They argue the government never properly served her with deportation order and failed to fully inform her of her right to appeal. Federal agents detained Vizguerra on March 17th, less than 2 months after President Donald Trump returned to office, while she was working at a Target store in the Denver area. Her attorneys filed a habeas petition the next day, contesting her detention. Vizguerra rose to national prominence in 2017 when she evaded immigration authorities by living in a church basement early in the first Trump administration. Her public defiance drew widespread attention, making her a symbol for both immigration activists and hardliners. She came to Colorado from Mexico in 1997 and worked her way up from cleaning offices to organizing for the janitors' union. In 2009, a routine traffic stop launched what has become a 15-year battle to stay in the U.S. Federal authorities initiated deportation proceedings, and while she appealed, Vizguerra traveled briefly to Mexico in 2012 to visit her dying mother. She later pleaded guilty to illegal reentry. After serving 1 year of unsupervised probation, Vizguerra successfully applied for stays of deportation 5 times. But when Trump first took office in 2017, ICE denied her 6th request. She sought sanctuary in the First Unitarian Church in Denver's Capitol Hill neighborhood. Time magazine named her one of the 100 most influential people of the year in 2017. Her cause was championed by Colorado lawmakers, including then-Congressman Jared Polis, who said he was being unfairly targeted soon after she received a 2-year stay of deportation and left the church. It was a short-lived reprieve in 2019 when her stay was not renewed. She again sought sanctuary in the church. By 2020, amid the pandemic, protests over the killing of George Floyd, and a turbulent election year, Vizguerra quietly left the church once more. Like many immigrants with uncertain status, Vizguerra kept a low profile, working at Target and raising her U.S. citizen children until Trump was reelected last year. His administration again moved to deport her shortly after his inauguration. Vizguerra's national profile has helped her secure extraordinary legal resources. Many of the hundreds of cases that go through immigration court in Colorado every year are rarely afforded more than limited pro bono help. Often, people going through immigration court don't have an attorney and are confused by the proceedings. Many are deported to their home countries with no fanfare, no press. Vizguerra's attorneys told the judge that they were frustrated by the immigration authorities trying to proceed with so-called reasonable fear. Interviews with Vizguerra is a normal part of the process triggered by previous deportation orders. I sent an email yesterday to the Houston Asylum Office reiterating my concerns about representation, and they're not communicating directly with my client unless I was present, and asking them to hold the review in abeyance pending the result of this litigation, said Lichter. The judge didn't rule on that issue, but noted that Vizguerra has the right to have counsel present at the interview. The judge also ordered the case to be unrestricted so that the filings are publicly posted online going forward. This story is from CPR News, a nonprofit public broadcaster serving Colorado, used by permission. For more and to support Colorado Public Media, visit cpr.org. Advertisement on this page, Colorado Sunfest. Let's discuss how to make Colorado better together. Grab your tickets by scanning the QR code or visit cosun.co/cosunfest2025. May 16th, all day, University of Denver. Full page of ads. American Residential. When was your last HVAC tune-up? Schedule soon and save up to $2,000. Call today, 855-684-2373. Accompanying coupons, $49 cooling or heating system tune-up, or save up to $2,000 on a new cooling and heating system with our buyback program. Offers free estimates and second opinions for new heating and cooling systems, many payment options to choose from, service available 7 days a week, licensed and professional technicians. Next advertisement, public meeting notice. Let's talk. How can AdventHealth Porter bring more whole person care to your community, our community? You are invited to attend AdventHealth's Community Health Improvement public meeting. We need your voice to guide AdventHealth's efforts to create a happier, healthier community. AdventHealth will take this opportunity to present our community benefit investments for 2024 and request your feedback on the Hospital Transformation Program. Additionally, the Denver Department of Public Health and Environment will share updates on its recent community improvement activities during the Community Voice section. Date May 13th, 2:30 to 4 p.m. at Jim Feldbusch Conference Room 2525 South Downing Street, Denver, Colorado 80210. Please register by scanning the QR code. Next advertisement, Reverse Mortgages Made Easy. Call me to schedule your free confidential in-home review of this unique product. Mike Bruja, Reverse Mortgage Specialist. Cell 720-435-0653. Mike at rmofco.com. Reverse Mortgages of Colorado, helping those in my community with their mortgage needs for over 36 years. Following advertisement, Vote Bold, Monarch Casino Spa, Blackhawk. 2025 Best of the Best, Colorado Community Media. We hope we have earned your vote again. Best Casino, Best Margarita, Best Steakhouse. Cast your vote today. Next article, Police Recover Stolen Painting. Image accompanying is of a portrait of George Washington. Caption, a painting of George Washington dating to the early 19th century is propped up on chairs at the Englewood Police Station after the department recovered it. The artwork was stolen early last year from Extra Space Storage on Santa Fe Drive in Englewood. George Washington portrait had vanished from storage in 2024 by Elizabeth Slay, ESLAY, at ColoradoCommunityMedia.com. After searching for more than a year, the Englewood Police Department has recovered a stolen historic painting of President George Washington. The lead investigator in the case, Detective Christian Contos, said the painting had been stolen in January 2024 from Extra Space Storage in the 3300 block of South Santa Fe Drive. Englewood Police and FBI Denver Field Office worked together to recover the painting. Last month, the Crime Stoppers tip provided a crucial lead, suggesting multiple individuals may have been involved in the theft. Contos identified someone he thought was in possession of the painting. I decided that publicizing this as much as possible might get someone's attention. And even though it took over a year, someone was paying attention and contacted us with information, Kontos said. That information was further investigated, which led me to a person of interest. I was able to contact that person through his acquaintances, and he confirmed he had the painting, but he said he did not steal the painting and was understandably scared to come forward. A news release from the police department added more detail about the man who had the stolen painting. He explained that while staying at a Denver hotel in 2024, a hotel clerk had given him the painting after finding it abandoned in a vacant room. Vacated room, the release said. Due to the widespread publicity surrounding the theft, he hesitated to come forward at the time. The painting was voluntarily surrendered to police on March 28th after 2 weeks of negotiations between Kontos and a representative of the man who possessed the painting. When I finally saw the painting in person, it was a huge relief, Kontos said. I was nervous but cautiously optimistic that the negotiations would work out and the painting would be turned over to me. But I was not going to be satisfied until that actually happened. I got the painting in hand on Friday night, March 28th, and was excited the entire weekend. The painting is a copy of an original. It's a reverse oil on glass. It dates from 1805 to 1818 and is one of only 6 or 7 copies in existence. 4 of the copies are in museums. Kontos said he notified the original owner of the painting that it had been located and received. We worked hard in the beginning to solve the case, and we were unable to find the painting early on, and he understood and appreciated all of our efforts then. Kontos said, when I told him I had the painting back, he was incredibly appreciative that we never gave up. It's always a good feeling when we can pass on good news to a crime victim. The painting was insured and will be turned over to the insurance company. When an item is stolen, damaged, destroyed, and if it is insured, the owner can file an insurance claim, Kontos said. If a claim is made by the owner, the insurance company would pay the owner for the value of the item. Once an insurance company pays out on a claim, the insurance company becomes the legal owner of the object. In this case, the owner had insured the painting, and the insurance company paid the claim to the owner. So the insurance company is now the legal owner of the painting. Kontos said, if the owner of the painting wants to retrieve the painting, then it's a civil matter between him and the insurance company. The police will not become involved in how the owner and insurance company decide to settle their case, Kontos said, because the insurance company now owns the painting. The police are required to turn over the painting to the insurance company unless the insurance company directs us to give the painting to someone else. Additionally, Kontos said that if he is able to identify the person or people who stole the painting from the storage locker, then they could be charged with burglary and theft. As law enforcement, we wish we were able to solve every single crime that is reported. But that's just not a reasonable expectation, Kontos said. I know that we need the assistance of the public to help solve crimes and recover stolen property like this painting, and I'm grateful and humbled when citizens speak up and help when they can as well. I am just excited that we were able to safely recover this incredibly important piece of American history. The painting appears to be largely undamaged, besides some minor cosmetic damage to the frame. Stacy Durbin, Community Relations Manager for Englewood Police, said, there have been 13 calls for service for theft or burglary at the Extra Space Storage between January 22, 2024 and March 31, 2025. Advertisements on this page. Generac, be prepared before the next power outage. It's not just a generator, it's a power move. Receive a free 5-year warranty with qualifying purchase, valued at $535. Call 866-977-2602 to schedule your free quote. Renewal by Anderson, 888-670-2459. BOGO, 40% off, minimum purchase of 4, plus $200 off your entire purchase, ends 4:30. Next article, a faraway galaxy comes to Hudson Gardens. Accompanying photos, a girl in a hoodie, with the hoodie pulled over her face, standing on a box in front of a strange design. The caption reads, "Space Conflicts is a fun parody and example of the immersive power of this kind of theatrical approach." Second photo, a group dressed up as aliens and what looks like Star Wars characters. Caption says, "The cast of Audacious Theater's farcical show Space Conflicts, the parody is coming to Littleton's Hudson Gardens on April 27th. Photos by Audacious Immersive. Article by Clark Reeder, Special of the Colorado Community Media. Immersive theater doesn't have to mean a lot of expensive bells and whistles. There are all kinds of ways to bring audiences into a new world. For Ren Manley, founding and artistic director of Audacious Theater, it's about involving all five of the audience senses to transport them to a different place. There's a lot of really cool stuff happening in the theater scene in Denver, especially within the immersive and interactive area," she said. "I'm interested in theater that involves all the senses because it's more memorable for the audience and allows for connection in a more intimate way. Audacious Theater is a portable theater company, so it usually takes its shows on the road. The plays are performed at places like breweries and other open spaces, and now it's bringing its immersive experience to Hudson Gardens, 6115 South Santa Fe Drive in Littleton, at 6 p.m. on Sunday, April 27th, with a production of Space Conflicts, May the Farce Be With You. Written by Rebecca Gorman O'Neill, MSU Denver professor of English and playwright, the show is a hilarious riff on one of the most beloved franchises in cinematic history. She was approached by Manley to write the show because Audacious was looking for a new, fun production they could take on the road. We'd worked with Rebecca on shows in the past, and she wrote a super fun, really cool script that plays with the idea of a hero's journey," Manley said. "She found all these silly plot holes and tropes in Star Wars to put in the play, and our own nerds contributed a few of their own jokes. Gorman O'Neill said she had a great time writing the show, but her favorite part was working with Audacious to get the production working. I wrote the script, but then was in strong collaboration with the artist," said Audacious. "Going to rehearsal, making changes on the fly, and playing up the strengths of the performers," she wrote in an email interview. "I love the collaborative nature of writing for theater, and working with the team was both fun and fulfilling. For audience members who may be worried that an immersive show means they might get pulled on stage, Audacious embraces an opt-in level of interactivity, where those who want to participate can purchase interactive bags full of items they'll be cued to use during the show. This makes each show unique and allows it to travel well. What's great about the piece is that it's a trunk show. It can be picked up and performed about anywhere," Gorman O'Neill wrote. "I've seen it done in a couple different breweries, and I'm excited that Audacious has an exciting new venue as well. The aim for everybody involved is to give audiences a taste of immersive theater while providing a great time out. And in a venue like Hudson Gardens, it will be difficult not to have a lot of fun with Space Conflicts. Our focus is making sure audiences have a really fun time," Manley said. "If you get excited about nerdy things, there's all kinds of Easter eggs that are really fun. But anyone who has any fandom in their heart will enjoy it. And hopefully audiences will be inspired to see more immersive shows. Visit www.audaciousimmersive.com for more information and www.hudsongardens.org for tickets. This coverage comes courtesy of a grant from the Littleton Arts and Culture Program. As a matter of policy, funders exercise no control over editorial decisions." The following is a section called Local Voices, a personal journey to help a friend in need. Words of Encouragement by Jim Room. "In our fast-paced, instant gratification world, I sometimes worry that encouragement is an art form we all are forgetting how to use. Some might be thinking I'm wrong, that they can point out inspiring things all around us. But encouraging others is different than inspiring them. Inspiration fires our hearts and points the direction we should go. Encouragement says, let me walk alongside you as you navigate this difficult path. Encouraging others is not complicated, but does take some intentionality. Two of the most helpful things you can do when trying to encourage others is to personalize the encouragement and to create opportunities for people to receive that encouragement on their time frame. Sometimes a window into how someone else has done something is the very best way to help you imagine how to do it yourself. As I have mentioned in the past, words of encouragement started when I was looking for a way to support a friend and his wife as they navigated his stage 4 colon cancer diagnosis. My efforts were far from perfect, but they were genuine, heartfelt efforts. My encouragement came in the form of emails so that they could read at their own time. Today I'm sharing two of the emails that I sent Shane and Summer over the course of his 4-year battle in hopes that you will find inspiration for encouraging others. The first email was sent in the later weeks of Shane's first chemotherapy rounds. You could see at that time that the medicine was wearing him out, and he needed encouragement to keep going. The second came as Shane was battling for his life 3 years into his fight and needed to be reminded of the beauty surrounding his life. Less than a year later, he would lose that battle. August 8th, 2017. Shane and Summer. Every Monday in college during the football season, we had to run the CC, Colorado College, Stadium Hill, 10 times at the end of practice. The hill was probably 35 yards long and very vertical. I never liked that hill, but I especially hated it when we were preparing to run the 9th hill. I hated it because we were not done, but we were close. There was still work to do and no way around it. Each week it took a special kind of mental focus to get started on that 9th hill. Marathon runners talk about the 19th mile in the same way. Okay, my hill was less taxing than 7 more miles of running. They tell about the mental energy that must go into breaking through that 19th mile barrier. As someone working to overcome a struggle, I know you can reflect on barriers you have needed to fight through as well. You, me, marathon runners, we have all done what we needed to do because we knew the reward for our diligence. This part of your struggle is no different than those hills or that mile. The rewards are bigger, but the mental energy needed to make it up that hill is tremendous. We would all have you take a different road if it were possible, but it's not. So you are going to do what must be done. This is the time when you must believe in the process, trust in God's plan, and use all of the determination you can muster. This struggle is messy, but you are built to push through it. You have the mental toughness inside you. The rewards are coming. Every indicator points to that result. Stay strong. You have got this. Jim. April 15th, 2020. Shane and Summer. There are moments in our lives when we know we are witnessing something spectacular. It might be a sunset or some other natural wonder. It could be a collective achievement or an individual's special moment. They are sights that stick with you forever. I still remember sitting in the stands at Mile High watching John Elway work his magic to beat the Houston Oilers in the last few seconds of a playoff game as my brother-in-law sat next to me repeatedly yelling, "Unexpletive, believable!" I also remember the space launch I watched, which carried an experiment created by Eagle Crest students on board in the Sunsets Beth and I saw over open space in New Mexico. The thing about those unforgettables is that you know it right away, as soon as you first glimpse it. There's never a doubt of the beauty of it, of its perfection, or the fact that it will influence you for the rest of your life. I hope that in the midst of this battle, you will take a moment to look at the beauty and the perfection of the life you have built, and that the longer you gaze, the more you are amazed, and the more you gain strength and the determination. The road you're traveling is difficult. Do not forget to take in the sights. You are amazing, and you have got this. Keep your eye on the beauty of what surrounds you. Jim. I'm afraid that is all the time we have for this week. Thank you for joining us. Denver Metro News, read by Matt.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.